Hello, everyone. I'm Luis, and this is The Debrief, a podcast from Incident.io. So if you've been keeping up with The Debrief recently, you'd know that we've been dedicating entire episodes to our latest batch of AI features. So far, we've covered suggested summaries and related incidents. Today, we're taking a look at Assistant. So in this conversation, I sit down with the project lead of Assistant, Charlie, who you might remember from the episode a few weeks ago where we announced AI to the world. And like the other episodes in this series, I chat with him to get a deeper look at how the project played out. If you've been enjoying these AI episodes, then I think you'll find this one particularly interesting. Assistant is a really, really cool feature, and I really enjoyed hearing Charlie get into the weeds of it all. After this episode, we only have one more feature to go, and that's suggested follow-ups, so be on the lookout for that soon. With that, here's my conversation with Charlie. So, Charlie, last time we spoke, we were actually announcing AI to the world. And in that episode, we sat down with you and Ed to go through all of our features. So Assistant, suggested summary, suggested follow-ups, and related incidents. And obviously, we're here to talk about Assistant, but what I'm really curious about is like your high-level reflections of all of these features over the last 3 weeks. Like, what has the reception been like? What has the reception been like internally? Like, how are you guys getting along using all of these features? Just again, very broad, but I'd love to sort of start this conversation with that question.
Just to start, it's great to be back. I really enjoyed being on the podcast. It's great to be back again, this time not with Ed, on my own. It's been a huge success, very much like felt within post-incident. So also known as Pink internally, that's the team that I'm in. It's just been a huge win. We've loved using the features and so have our customers. We've got a Slack channel called AI Pulse that as users start to use the features, they automatically post into that channel. So we get a real good vibe of not just how active, but how different features are performing. And I say all of them have added huge value. It's interesting to compare the different ones, which one have been home runs versus maybe which ones have just done great. Some of the smaller features compared to Assistant, so suggested summaries and suggested follow-ups, continue to get huge amounts of customer praise within our Slack Connect channels. So we normally wake up to a CSM posting a customer quote within our team channel saying, hey, this is another person that loves suggested summaries. So yeah, I think those two features especially, because there's just such huge immediate quality of life improvements, have really resonated. And then Assistant has also been a huge win, but it's been a little bit different from one organization to the next. And that's very much down to how you use Assistant, the quality of questions that you're asking, what type of analysis you're doing already, and you might be replacing it with. So that one is a bit, it's a bit different compared to which customer. And related incidents is probably the one that we want to do most work on. Still a win, but I think the value add for customers there isn't as immediately clear. But yeah, overall, vibes are high in the office. It was a great launch. The podcast did really well. So did blog posts. So yeah, across the board, it was a real success.
Gotcha. The first thing that I'm going to say is I'm really disappointed in you for not mentioning that on Wednesdays you wear pink on the pink team. And I think that's probably the most important thing, and you failed to mention that, so we should just scrap the rest of this recording. Before we started recording, we were actually speaking about how Assistant is really unique in that it's the most, I would say, capable of all of the features because there's so many possibilities, whereas all of the rest of the features are fantastic, but they have like a very specific use case. Assistant can assist you in a ton of different ways, but we'll get into that. I'd love to sort of start out by asking what the like genesis of Assistant was. Like, why did we decide that this was a thing that we were going to do? How did we decide on that? Just curious, like what are the origins of Assistant?
So I think it was kind of early Q4 2023. Ed was kind of inspired from the release of Advanced Data Analytics, which is an OpenAI plugin within ChatGPT, which is that kind of new interface that we've seen, which is hand it some data, you ask some questions, And we were doing a project at the time called Insights Usability, which was a load of user research around how can we extend our Insights product. And that was led by Ed. As part of that, he wrote what we call a product cover sheet, which is kind of like a one pager on an idea around a feature, outlining why we would do it, who wants it, that kind of thing. And that's where, at the time, AI Insights was born, and we later renamed it to Assistant. So that was kind of genesis. And from there, before we really got to Assistant, we did the other three smaller AI projects. That was somewhat deliberate. They were a lot more firmed up and smaller in scope. Some of them kind of took a week or a week or two to deliver. And as I mentioned earlier, like hugely successful. Whereas this one, we were really unsure, both from a technology perspective, how are we going to build it? What were we going to build? Like the scope was very big. So there's lots of open questions. So from that product cover sheet, we then kind of moved into phase one, which was alpha. And that was very much just aimed at like, does this work and do customers get excited by it? Then we moved into phase two, which was, yes, they do. Let's make this into something that we're kind of proud of and launch it as a beta to 10 customers. And then from there, we then went into GA polish, which is the fourth week of the project, which is just iterating on feedback from beta customers to make sure that we could get something that had a really, really high bar. We'd seen how great the other AI projects were. We have a very high bar for quality anyway for our product features. So that last week was just making sure that everything was as shiny as possible. And then we launched, like 3 weeks ago, like early January.
Yeah. One thing that I'd love to know is working backwards the typical thing that we do? Because I feel like, I mean, again, correct me if I'm wrong. It feels like usually it's, you know, you want to build a feature. You know exactly what you need to do in order to build it. You work towards it. You release it. You know, it feels like this time around, we knew that we wanted to create something abstract with AI, but we didn't know exactly what that would look like. So is that a typical process, or are we usually more sort of structured around the way that we work towards certain products?
Yeah, I'd say very non-typical of all the projects that I've worked on. It's that cover sheet that normally comes from a product manager like Ed will actually be really quite well defined. And it normally comes from a very specific customer ask or a set of customer asks that we're kind of shaping into, okay, this is what we're going to go after. And yet normal projects are very much well defined. We might spend 1 to 2 weeks on them. And in that, we're just building and launching. There's no element of alpha, beta, GA. Yeah, those tend not to be considerations at all. So this was, a very unique project in that way, I think. And it worked really well. I wouldn't say that we sat down at the start and we said, we're going to run the project exactly like this. However, how it kind of fell really felt good by the end of it. And that just was mainly around not thinking too far ahead. Like, we want to spend a week understanding, is this good? Does the technology work? And our customers excited about it. We're laser focused on that 1 week goal. We're not really thinking about, oh, how would we launch a beta, or what would GA look like, or how would we launch this from a marketing perspective? We're just super focused on, we've got one alpha customer. Let's see if we can impress them and then move on to the next thing, focus on that, move on. And that really, really worked. I think, it was a good combination of early people in the project that kind of just had a really good heads down mentality to focus on the problem at hand.
So you were the project lead of Assistant. I'd love to know what the rest of the team looked like and what each of their roles were throughout this project.
So I'll mention Ed again. He's not here, but I'll point at him anyway. So yeah, he was project manager. He was actually a data analyst, kind of transitioning over to his new role. But yeah, was basically fulfilling a product manager role at that point. He was go-to in terms of customer understanding, talking a lot to customers and looking back at seeing kind of customer asks in the past. Especially, he'd done the usability project looking at Insights previously. So he was really well positioned to just have like finger on the pulse of what customers wanted. Myself as project lead. Then we had another Charlie, who was a product manager. So he really helped with structuring the project, making sure that we were keeping pace, doing a lot of the communications between myself, customers, And we had a remote designer for this project. So there's lots of kind of interactions there and just being like the glue that held the project all together. We had a remote designer who none of us had worked with before. He came on board halfway through the project within the beta phase. So that was really interesting, going from like no design to lots of design. And that's a competing element to how you prioritize work. At first, we just wanted to build something technically, whereas later on, we had to make sure that it looked and felt great. And then we had a number of engineers also on the project. So Teddy, who was relatively new to the team at that point, Millie, who's been here for yonks, and Aaron as well, a very senior member of the team. He's a tech lead for post-incident. So yeah, all in all, like it basically touched, and Rob. So basically touched all of post-incident, was involved with assistant at one point, but it very much was kind of people coming off and on the project throughout. It wasn't everyone's on, everyone's off. There was lots of playing human chess throughout the 4-week process.
Yeah. And what is it like being a lead on a project like this? And how did being a lead on this compare to like your previous experiences as a lead? I'm guessing it's very, very different, but again, correct me if I'm wrong.
Somewhat different. I actually was chatting to Aaron about this in one-to-one recently, because through each of the different phases, I just had a very different role. So phase one, alpha, I was the only engineer on the project. It was just me and Ed, basically. And there was no one to chat to or manage. It was just me building. So that felt similar to other projects that I've done in the past. Phase two was bringing Rob and Teddy on board, and whilst also kind of managing the project, and we're also having a real focus on prompt engineering. So that was how we like to talk about it in post-incident, or generally at incident, going from eyes down to eyes up, or being able to switch between the two very kind of rapidly, where your primary focus should be eyes up as a project lead at that point. You've got like three other engineers to kind of aid, but you're also doing some eyes down work. And then final phase, the project, I think there was like maybe 4 or 5 of us polishing for GA in that week. I think it was 4. And yeah, like most of my week was eyes up, helping people with work, directing work at people, generally being a person to go and talk to. So I wasn't really doing so much coding. So yeah, it was like very different at all stages, but especially the kind of phase 3 GA, I'd never been on a project with that many engineers at incident. So it felt like awesome. We were getting through loads of work. But as a project lead, it's quite manic because you've got lots of things juggling simultaneously, and you don't get the kind of gratification of doing that work. So it's very eyes up.
Yeah. One thing that we spoke about or touched on earlier is this idea that like assistant in particular is like this very abstract vision. And like you said, it was unique in that we were working backwards. The thing with that is I can imagine it's very hard to align on, again, what you're working towards and what good looks like in that vision. So how exactly did you guys align on, okay, we know we're doing an assistant feature. What is that going to look like? And how is that going to look good? Like, how did you decide on that when you were sort of working backwards towards this idea?
Great question. I think it was linked to something that I mentioned earlier, which is focusing on the kind of problem at hand. So within alpha, all we cared about from a good was, does our alpha customer think this is cool and would use it? And there's no, hey, do we think this looks good or has any form of like good UI or UX? Because it was like, we didn't have a designer yet, so that didn't even come into it. We didn't care about how quick the assistant was. Really, quality of responses wasn't too much of a concern at that point. It's just putting something very bare bones. And we want to see the customer think, oh, this is really cool. It's not just a toy. This is really valuable. And that is good. Whereas I think you could kind of get distracted by thinking, oh, we actually need to have something that looks great as well, and you're trying to juggle all these things. Whereas then we go into beta and it's really evident that the assistant is slow. We've been told tons, because at this point in beta, we've got a lot of internal feedback from the team. We like to work really fast at incidents. Everyone's saying, hey, this is too slow, this is too slow. Customers are telling us the quality of responses is an issue. It's got lots of errors. So, hey, okay, we've got really obvious things to run after at this point. So I think it's just focusing on the problems at hand rather than trying to make problems for you, for yourself and the team, like over engineering, like, oh, what about this? What about this? It's like, no, let's just fix the big things right now. Go back to customers, constantly be having these daily conversations with customers. And then you can kind of iterate out of these problems into new problems, which is great because then, hey, we've got other things to focus on. Customers are happier. We're getting closer to launch. So yeah, I think focusing on the problem at hand. And then phase three was like a very high bar for polish.
Yeah.
As I mentioned before, I think we have this for all of our product features, but we wanted to make a big splash with this launch as well. We're kind of doing a marketing launch, which isn't our normal launch process for a feature. So there was added pressure on making this great. And plus, we'd spent 4 weeks on this project. That's a long time for incident. So again, added pressure. So in that last phase, we were considering tiny, minute details of assistant, which we never would have even like noticed in the other two phases. So yeah, I think it's having a really focused and disciplined approach, not getting too carried away and not trying to make more problems for yourself.
Yeah. You mentioned that we had 4 weeks, or your team had 4 weeks to work on this project. And that's a bit unique because I know we work very, very quickly. So like you said, 4 weeks is a bit unheard of. For you, is that like a sigh of relief? Oh my God, I have a lot of time to work on this thing. Or does it make it even harder, given some of the sort of uncertainties around like what we were building?
I wouldn't say we really sat down at the start of the project and said, hey, we've got 4 weeks, let's do this. Like,
yeah,
it was, we've got a week. Like, let's prove that we should get another week. And then when we got, we're like, okay, coming out of alpha. And then we were like, okay, how should we run the next stage of the, like, should we do, how many engineers do we need? Like, how should we approach beta? Like, what should we kind of pull into that? What are our problems? And it's like, okay, cool. Really, like, let's increase the team size. Just having Charlie on this doesn't work. Let's get a designer. Let's do this over 2 weeks. And I think we could get to a really good beta. And that I think at that stage as well, at least from my perspective as project lead, I'm then not thinking, oh, what about GA? Do we need another 4 weeks there? It's just like laser focus, run really fast at the current thing you're on. I imagine Charlie, for instance, was doing lots of this type of thinking behind the scenes whilst we were all busy away building assistant. So maybe want a question for him on how he kind of thought of this at the start. Yeah. But from a project lead perspective, yeah, it was definitely didn't have that foresight of we must deliver in 4 weeks.
Yeah, actually, I think that's really interesting. It's like, you know, basically survive or live to see another day. Like you're working towards this for a week. And at the end of that week, you're like, okay, is it worth spending another week on this? Going through that second week, you know, rinse and repeat. I think that's really interesting. But one of the things that I've been asking pretty much everyone who's been on these AI projects is, how is it like both learning and building? Because AI is really new, prompt engineering is really new. So for you, what is it like learning how to do something like prompt engineering while building out a project or a product that you're trying to release to people and have it be legitimately useful? Like I can imagine it can be kind of stressful to, again, learn while building and build while learning.
Yeah, I think this came down to having a really good team. So we'd learned from the previous projects that prompt engineering wasn't the same as our kind of existing work. Like you really need dedicated focus time throughout the day. You couldn't just say, hey, I'm going to put an hour towards the prompt and we're going to make it way better. Like it's kind of a question mark of, can I even solve this problem? Especially if you're relatively new to prompt engineering. It is a black box at the end of the day and you're kind of like, I hope it's going to work. Maybe I'm going to make it worse. I don't know. And very much at the start, there's a lot of, I do something and it actually makes it worse. So yeah, I think having a great team structure that allows one person, or maybe two people, but like allows individuals in the team to really go after prompt engineering and say, I'm going to spend the whole day on it and really heads down, that helped a lot. generally having just like a get done, heads down, trial and error, like work through the problem mentality with it works really well, because you just need to like iterate as much as possible. And you're learning so much as you're writing different instructions within the prompt. So it is a little bit frustrating, I would say, but it has the same like dopamine release as normal coding, I'd say. It's like you get nothing and then you do something and it magically works. And you probably get that bigger hit from like, wow, that was great. And I've learned something and I can apply that to my next prompt engineering problem. So yeah, I think I'm not diminishing, like it is a strange skill to learn and it's somewhat related to writing code, but I would say that it's a lot of magic as well. But if you've given someone the space to do it and they're really determined, I think it's like super possible. And I think one big thing that we learn is that OpenAI is incredible, our overlords. However, they also have issues. So a lot of the time we thought, oh, why isn't this working? Is this just something to do with our prompt? And it just ended up to be an OpenAI problem. Their API was being really slow today and we thought it was us and it was them. We had a really long-term bug around hallucinating where assistant would tell you that it's going to do some analysis and then halfway through it just would stop and confirm that it's finished the analysis. And we had no idea how to solve this. We put a lot of time into like, come on, do the work. If you're going to say something, then you actually have to carry it out. And this wasn't us. They released a model update in January and they called it laziness, where the assistant kind of would portray its plans and then not do anything. So again, like it's okay to like drop an issue and go on to something else, because it might be OpenAI related. That's one of the big benefits of going with their assistance API product, is that yes, you're making the product better on your end through building, but also you just get free updates from OpenAI. Hey, we fixed this big bug. And then all of our customers are a lot happier. So yeah, I think it's a toughie, but you just need to be really determined.
Has your perspective changed at all on prompt engineering? Like, and the answer can be no, and we can just move on. But when you saw prompt engineering sort of propping up, did you sort of cast it away as like, oh, this seems kind of silly. Like, I'm never going to use this or learn how to do this. And then once we started on assistant, did your perspective and attitude on it change? Or were you always sort of on board with this idea of like, you know, having an assistant, you know, throwing queries at this thing and having it spit out, you know, whatever? Yeah, just on a personal level, I'm really curious to see if you've had any changing tides there.
I would say like I'm a bit of a fanboy when it comes to using these types of tools. Like,
yeah,
really like Raycast Pro. I think they have done an amazing job with like integrating it into lots of different workflows. So like day to day, I was using it a lot as is, but I 100% agree that like the title of prompt engineer seemed a bit silly to me. It's really funny. Our engineering manager, Chris, got us all hats at the end when we launched, which said prompt engineer with our name on the hat, which is great. Love that. But yeah, I thought, this is a bit silly. Like, could someone really spend all day, every day in an organization just like tweaking prompts? 100% think yes. And that is going to increase hugely over the coming years. We actually put out a load, like we were quite stuck at one point with a few problems. And we were like, okay, well, we can kind of power through this, but let's also just go out to a network and see if there's any people who have already done this or they know prompt engineers that can come in for a day and just tell us how wrong we are. And we put out feelers into the kind of investor network and our personal networks. Does anyone know a prompt engineer that can come and help us? And everyone came back with no. However, if you find anyone, can you tell us? Because we also want a prompt engineer. So it's, I think, a super clear role. We're continuing to build AI features going forward. Like, we're not just going to stop at four. We're going to continue to put it into more pieces of the product. So yeah, having someone who's just an expert on it, it would be great. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. We touched on this a bit earlier, but design partners, what was it like working with design partners throughout this assistant project? And did we work a little more closely with them than we otherwise would with like any other run-of-the-mill project that we work on a week-to-week basis? Like, did we lean on them a bit more given, again, a ton of the uncertainties around like what we were building and what good looked like? Or was it more sort of business as usual when it came to collaborating with them?
Like 100% very different. I would say that as an organization, we talk to customers so much, but this project as a whole felt very different to that. And we needed a lot of head nods along the way just to nudge us in the right direction because the scope was so huge to what we could build. So we really needed an understanding of like, are we on the right path? And that was just like consistent daily conversations with alpha and beta customers. And I think the key piece, as we built more and more of it, customers started to ask for features, which at the beginning of the project, we said, hey, we're not going to build this. This is out of scope. Let's focus on like the value add and then we can come back to it later on. But they started to ask for those features. Hey, I really want a way to share this question or this thread that I've had with assistant with my team, or how do I take this chart that assistants made, and I want to put it in the dashboard and I want to update it every day. I don't want to have to go back to the thread. And these are all like the big ideas we had at the beginning. And that's just awesome to see. It's like the biggest head nod you can get. Hey, this is great. We trust you. And we really want to use your feature to share amongst our organization. So yeah, I think having that close connection with the customers that we chose really allowed them to like be imaginative and suggest features and that type of relationship. So yeah, I think that was great. Another big win from design partners. I mentioned previously that here at Instant, we really like to go fast. So a big thing within beta was response times for assistant was too slow. And you could ask anyone in the team here, it's too slow and we need it to be faster. But actually our design partners said, hey, yeah, it could be quicker. But actually the thing that we really want you to focus on is quality of response from prompts and making sure that there's never any errors. I don't want to see errors. And I really want the assistant to continually update me. So let's say it's processing for 20 seconds. Every 5 or 10 seconds, it's letting the user know, hey, I'm at this stage or whatever. And they were really focused on that. So I think, and maybe to our own fault, we're really focused on pace here. It's one of our like key processes, but having those design partners allowed us to course correct slightly to see, okay, not all organizations are as obsessed with pace as we are. Let's go after these other problems as well as pace.
Yeah. I'd love to get into how this all works. How does assistant work on the back end?
It's not the craziest in terms of, I would love to say, it's incredible engineering feat, but OpenAI have made it really, really simple. So Aaron, I was chatting to Aaron Techley in Post Instant today about this podcast, and he said, oh, what was like, I think you should go through the things that you liked about OpenAI and disliked about OpenAI's solution, as well as talking about how we built it. And I think one of the big things that they did so well is API design and documentation. So when you go into their assistance API, it just makes sense. You're going around and you're like, yeah, like that's how I would expect it to be modeled. So you go into their world and you have to mentally model like, okay, there are assistants and threads and I can add messages to threads and I can process them. It all just makes sense. Like no one at any point complained that, hey, the documentation is wrong or out of date, or this is a bit weird. Why does it do this? Which is, I would say, a typical thing when you're integrating with a partner. So yeah, the assistant API is like awesome from OpenAI. Specifically how we built it, each organization that has the assistant feature enabled gets their own assistant. This is going to get confusing within OpenAI. And then we have a specific DBT pipeline that builds out a data set for each of those organizations. And then we're uploading that data set into the organization's assistant instance every 30 minutes. We could increase this and it becomes more of like a real-time tool in the future. So you could technically go in and ask the assistant what's happened in the last 15 minutes or what's happened in the last 5 minutes. And if we up that upload rate, it would have that context, but not for now, something for the future. So alongside this, each organization's assistant instance has a prompt. Ours is around 1,000 words, which is quite long. And when someone accesses the dashboard app, for instance, IO, we create a thread with their assistant instance specific to that user, and it's throwaway. So it's kind of one time. We don't do any saving in terms of they can come back later or anything like that. If they close the page, it's gone. One really interesting thing that we figured out kind of halfway through the project is that you have a thread, and typically users will add messages to the thread. You then say process the thread, and the assistant model adds messages back, and you kind of have this conversation. But we wanted to add dynamic information to the thread so the assistant knew who you were. So we preload the thread with messages that look like they come from the user. So this just started out as really basic things as, hey, this person is called Charlie, and today's date is Monday, the 5th of February. But we kind of learned over time that you could reinforce parts of the prompt by also putting it in this preloaded context. So for example, with us, we really didn't want certain language being used by the assistant because it loves to be super technical. So within that preloaded context, it looks like a user message. It just says, hey, I really prefer non-technical language. Please avoid words such as X, Y, and Z. And assistant will massively weight towards that over the prompt that's handed to it. So you got your 1,000-word prompt, but maybe three things of those are like super important, has to be done. You can take those out, preload your thread with that. It just reinforces it. It has a much higher weight. And that helped like dramatically. It solved so many of our problems, because once you start to have a slightly too long prompt, then you get into rounds of it ignoring parts of it and wanting to go after others. And I think last bit on this is the OpenAI Assistance API is all poll. So you're pushing information into it. And then you have to start processing and have to continually poll their API to say, hey, has it finished processing? Has it finished processing? This is a bit annoying. Not the end of the world. Made the implementation slightly less elegant. We'd loved to have push here. But yeah, just something to be aware of. And you can also not stream messages. So we had to fake stream messages within the UI to get that cool ChatGPT writing the words out one by one style. And I think the last thing is that I think a lot of people would look at the API design from OpenAI and just say, oh, wow, I can just store everything I want within there. And I can just query it from their API. And we did this for alpha because it's super quick to build. But within beta, we started pushing all the data into our own database. So this was one, much better in terms of performance. But the bigger win was that now we've got all this data sat within our database, sits within all of our BI pipelines, and we all of a sudden have real-time analytics on how everyone is using the assistant. And this was, we kind of had a bad version in alpha and had an amazing version in beta. So from beta day one, we could see how everything was performing. We had goals on timed first response. So how long does it take the assistant to reply to the first message in a thread versus the average and median for all messages? Error rates, like it made a huge difference. This was a massive departure from our normal projects, which typically we don't have a meta-based dashboard until after the project's finished. We want to see how usage it has picked up since launch. Whereas actually we really needed this information to understand speed, how quickly were we really doing? Okay, Charlie's pushed a change to the prompt. Has that made any difference when it comes to speed? And we were obsessed with this dashboard all the way throughout the project. So yeah, I think nothing wrong with utilizing their AI, OpenAI's API to store and query the data from, which is just a big win for us.
Yeah. I love how you open by saying that it's not like super complicated. It's actually very straightforward. And all of that sounds very involved. So, I mean, I may have to go back and edit you and to say, oh, it is actually very, very complicated. Let me explain why. But yeah, no, that all, I've seen the finished product and it looks amazing. But you mentioned the word future. What is the future of Assistant? Like, what are we working on now? Like, for future iterations of Assistant, do we have a clear sense of, compared to like when we were first building this out, where we were like, you know, working backwards, do we have a very clear sense of what we're working towards now? Or are we still sort of like waiting and seeing, like, let's work towards something for a week, see if it's worth investing another week in that? Just like curious about what's ahead for Assistant.
So it's still pretty early days. We haven't got anything concrete on the roadmap in terms of when exactly we're going to start targeting these things. However, there's lots of things that we want to go after, and they generally fall into two buckets. One, which is like continuing down the AI insights road. At the moment, you can open the awesome overlay that swishes in, have this amazing conversation, but then you can close the tab and open it again and your conversation's gone. There's no like historical element to it. There's no sharing, there's no persistence. So I have this awesome conversation with the assistant. Maybe I want to refer to it later on, or I want to share it with the teammate, or I want to rerun it in the future because it's a report that is like magical and I want to do this every Monday because it really helps me understand what's going on in my team. All of that is really difficult at the moment. Yeah. So I think there's an element to just improving usability, sharing. There's then a kind of additional piece to that, which is once you've built a really interesting chart within Assistant, you typically don't really want to go back to a chat UI to get that, like an updated version of that. You really want that sitting in a dashboard that you can go back and refer to. That's not an easy problem to solve, but I think it's super powerful because creating dashboards is typically a not particularly enjoyable thing to do. It's also quite hard to do if you're doing it from a kind of point and click interface. Whereas if you can have a conversation with assistants helping you direct you towards a chart, which is really valuable, or just helping you build an interesting chart because you have no idea what you think is cool, then that is a great starting point to empower dashboards. So that's a bit more of a kind of maybe someday, but I think that's where it's going, I think, when it comes to insights. And the other side of it is kind of what I mentioned before, which is around like real-time assistant use. We really targeted insights to start with because of that usage with ChatGPT's kind of code analysis. It was the obvious use case, but really you can put assistant anywhere in the application. You can put it on a incident details page. You'll sat on the incident details. I don't want to click around looking for things. I just want to ask assistant what I want to ask. I'm building a workflow. I don't want to build the workflow. I just want to describe the workflow and then have assistant build it for me. I'm sat in the catalog. I don't want to look in the catalog. I don't know where to look in the catalog, but I know somewhere in the catalog, there's the thing that I need. I'll just go and ask assistant. And there's tons of places. I mean, you can basically put it anywhere. So making it more generic, different data sources that it's kind of operating on and going on kind of a wider view, horizontal, versus the insights, which is, I think, going like deeper vertically on like a really specific feature set. So yeah, as I said, no plans currently in terms of exact roadmap dates, but lots of chat internally because we love using it. We think there's like a lot of use cases which you can put forward for it.
Gotcha. And just to round things out, I'm a user and I say, hey, Assistant looks really cool, but I don't know if I should be using it. Sell me on the value of Assistant.
I would say get Assistant to sell itself on the value of using it. I use this a lot because I'm also not great at asking questions in this UI. You can just ask the assistant. You can just say, hey, what's three really interesting things that you can help me with today? Or if you know that it's specifically around reporting to senior engineering leadership, then you could say, just describe the problem that you'd like. Similar to ChatGPT, hey, I need to create some charts. I want to explore this part. And it's really, really, like, it's surprisingly good at coming up with really interesting, detailed questions. You kind of skip ahead. Like, you might have been able to get there, but that's quite a long conversation to get to, or learning, like, how to prompt assistant. Whereas if you can see it immediately, that's really good. But if I was selling it, I think it honestly is just a completely open-ended interface for your incident data. So it has access to all of your historical incidents, not all data on it, but all of the critical data that we think. You can ask it anything. I think from a personal point of view, lots of people internally like to see how many incidents have I led? What are the major incidents that I've led? These are very simple questions, but this kind of gives you an idea of viewing it from your own personal perspective. You can kind of move up to your team level. So who's been really involved in incidents lately? Who hasn't been? What's the team dynamic been? Can really help you identify patterns in that. And then you can zoom out all the way to the company level and see how are, let's say, metrics around time to resolve, or just generally basic questions around how many incidents am I having? What days of the week are they happening on? These are all kind of, I wouldn't say the most complex questions that it can answer, but have an approach with assistant, which is always just ask it an interesting basic question. And then if you're stuck, ask it to help you. So just say, how could you make that? How would you carry on this analysis in an interesting way? Give me three options. Okay, let's go with number two. Like one of the features that we talked about making was just like a tab yes button, because we typically try and end responses with assistant suggesting a follow-on step. And at one point it was so good that you could just type yes, 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 and it would have this amazing analysis journey. And all you're doing is just being like, yeah, that's a cool question. Let's go, let's look at that now. That's another cool question. Let's look at that. So yeah, it really isn't based on your skill set asking questions. Rely on it. It's great at that.